Now, here's the part I want to show you, which, of course, Jim Bradshaw is going to go into in great detail later. Look what entropy does in this race. The entropy loves that slow 7 furlong place horse. Entropy says it's the best horse in the race. Well, without that horse, you don't get this exact. How many of you just ignore the place horse? You're not cooperating very well. Usually, I have a fellow that worked with me, Daryl Martin, for years and years, and he said, Howard, I wish I had a dollar for every time the horse I bet to win came in second. I said, why don't you bet him to plate? Oh, no. In the long run, you make more money winning. Well, he was 40 then, now he's 68. And I said, how long is your long run, Daryl? Did you know that in order to win an exacta, you have to have the place horse in there? This comes as a shock to you.
None of it's ugly.
You have to have the place horse. So you must focus on the different factors that create place horses. And one of the greatest programs we have for establishing place horses, getting your exactas, is entropy. Entropy likes that place horse the most because of its running style. It likes the winner second best, which is quite normal, and it throws out Z completely, even though Z was considered actually the favorite in the race. Z was the favorite in the race, and the program threw it out. Anytime you have something that'll throw out the favorite legitimately, you're a step ahead. A gentleman here was asking me yesterday, my program gets the favorite a lot in the top two. Should I just ignore it? Because it only wins 33% of the time. And he was serious, and I'm not making fun of him. He didn't know they're grinning at me. What are you going to say next? But if you throw out the winner 33% of the time, then you know what you have to do to get 67% winners? Win 100% of your races. So, no, I would not say to throw out the favorite every time because it only wins 33 1/3. I know some people who don't win 33 1/3. In fact, if you read Dick Mitchell's book, programmer doesn't even win 33 1/3. What a mistake that was. Now here's what I'd like you to look at. Look at the probability. Look at the probability on these horses. As a winner, this horse that placed has very little probability of winning. But you remember, we don't have a place probability line yet, and I hate to think what's going to happen if we have Bradshaw program the place probability line. Bradshaw, you think you can handle that? I think you'll need some help on that one. But look what the odds should be on Stead. 317-1. Well, then it goes up at 480-1. That's a value horse. The next the best horse is Little, according to the probability, and the most likely is Cove. Well, Cove didn't make it. But Cove would be one of those kind of horses that they would say, well, there's no value in him, so don't bet him. All the program points to is the winner, the place horse, and the probability puts the place horse in as a bet. You will see probabilities and odds lines for horses coming up throughout the day. Any questions on this procedure or on the readouts you see before you? Questions before it. Spencer, if you and Ron could stop having your private seminar back there and get to work, when you come to edit the follow-up and you say, I never heard that stuff, I'm going to get you. Questions? Spencer will bring a mic to you. Any questions? Yeah, take it to the show. Right here. Yeah.
When you say to add the variant to the speed rating, do you add the whole variant?
Yes.
Or do you use a half variant?
If you use a half variant, you won't get it.
Okay. What about adjusting the average of the speed rating, right, 17 and 20 and so on?
It's all done. Just use the speed rating.
Okay.
We're not using it for any other purpose except to establish a number that we will use, cause to use the horse. So you have to use the whole thing.
Okay, and you only have to adjust it for track speeds, the difference in track speed.
That's right. You want to make sure that if it has a 90 somewhere and that's only an 80 at the track you're going, you don't get overwhelmed by it. Right. You got that absolutely right. You'll find when I say speed rating and variant, if I meant half the variant, I would have said half the variant. I really say what I mean, mostly, except the girls. Yes?
Doc, would you explain that two adjustment?
No. That's it. I won't explain it now, but believe me, we got an hour or so dedicated to explain that to you. I made the two adjustment because the computer asked for it. The separation of the total energy of these horses is such that the computer asked for it. Now, you're going to meet some guys like Rohammer and Bradshaw. When they get it down to two horses or three horses, they don't have to make any adjustments. We're mortals. They're not. Except to their wives. Yes, sir?
Doc, are you going to talk about the probability more later?
Oh, are we? Bradshaw's going to get up there and wax poetic on it.
I'll hold my question.
Okay, good enough. Yeah, this is the latest edition. This thing is... it's really sensational what it does. More questions? Here's the one right up here, Spencer. This is more fun when everybody can hear your question.
When you were selecting the pace line, you say you want a comfortable distance, surface, and class of track?
Right. Not class of track so much as class of horse. In other words, if you've got a $6,000 horse that's going at $12,000 a day, I wouldn't call that comfortable class. If he's coming from Turf Paradise, and you've got a Santa Anita line, I wouldn't use the Turf Paradise line. So just think in terms of what in your mind is comparable. Don't make a rule, but I didn't make any stringent things here. It's just a guideline. Just use some common sense.
On page 5, the chart there for speed equalizer, You are using half the racing form variance. Why do you?
No, on the speed equalizer, I'm not using any variance.
Says enter final time, speed rating, and half racing form variant.
Well, somebody,
that's the instructions at the top.
Good. Well, then that's what it says. Do it.
That's all right.
Yeah, do it. Go ahead. That's what it says. I don't know. I don't remember writing that, but I guess I did. My daughter wouldn't put that in, would she? She doesn't even know what a variant is. I guess I did. So if I said it, it must be right. What you really want to do here is equalize the speed rating. I should take that half of it, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. Because you're going to screw up real badly if you try to equalize it with the variant. I'm going to have that erased for now. Everybody erase that plus one half racing form variant. That was on some other form, and it got copied onto this. You want to just equalize your speed rating. And then you can take the variant into consideration afterwards, but I wouldn't be entering any specific number. Yes, Spencer?
I was wondering, back on page 7, on never cancel, the 89s came from Fairflex, and I'm wondering why you chose to go with those rather than the 78 on Santa Anita.
Which line did I use? The Fairflex 3-back, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's comparable to its best line. And the other one's not a comparable distance. It did lousy. You're not going to use that line beaten by 12, are you? The Santa Anita. 7 furlongs beaten by 12. I mean, does that make any sense?
So you go ahead and put the 89 in, but remember that it's from Fairflex?
Yeah, and I didn't use the second line back because it was a $5,000 claiming race, and it ran through good, but it also ran fairly well at 8. And I was just trying to put the horse in because the client didn't, and I felt that you would want to put him in. Which line would you use? Would you go way, way back to Hollywood 6.5 furlong at 1250? 81 speed rating, he wouldn't have been qualified. This is put in there just so you'd ask that question, really. It doesn't belong in the race, but if you have to put him in, you put him in on that line. Now look to see what he did. That's the most important thing. Look at the result, not just the cause. Look at the effect. Is that a question? If you put him in, it says here. If you put him in, on the two adjustments, you have blocked the horse. You have to make a decision. Can that horse, is that horse comparable to these other horses? You know what we didn't use the last slide? He was beating the 17 some odd lengths. He had no speed rating. He had nothing. But if you're going to use him, if you're going to be strict about it, you're going to have to put him in. If you too adjust that horse, you bought him. Yes, sir. Fletcher, get your back. Boy, oh boy, you're going to be... Who's that pot belly of yours here this seminar?
I was just curious, Doc. The horse Z, you marked him out. Was that just because he happened to be the high point total of the entropy sort of routine?
That's the only reason, because I put him in. I gave him every chance in the world. That's a favorite. You got it. Never leave out a favorite to begin with, folks. They figure in too many of the races. They figure in not only as winners, but they figure as placers. They figure in exactas. They figure in trifectas. You just can't. You have to measure the others by the favorite. When your program legitimately throws it out, you can breathe a sigh of relief. And entropy threw the horse out. He did not have any of the qualifications. Did not have a one in the early pace EV. So it didn't qualify. Yes, any question here?
Kenny Rogers
is going to speak now. Sing us a little something.
Sing
us a little something.
Okay. Never Canceled, going back to Never Canceled here. How much credence do you put on the actual condition of the horse? You went all the way back down to his line as an example in Hollywood, but the Santa Anita line, he was 12 lengths back when he finished. Could the condition of the horse have anything to do with that? How do you feel about
this? Actually, I didn't go back to that one. Which line did I use?
You were talking about it.
Yeah, it's marked as the one you would have to use if you didn't use the other. That's why it's there. And if you use that one, you throw him out.
Right.
That's when he barely makes it. The condition of the horse?
Yeah, his last race now. He was 12 lengths back in his last race.
Yeah, but he didn't feel well. He finished twice. One win and two straight places before that bad race.
Right.
If I throw out a... out of hand, throw out a bad last race, and he beats me, which he's done a number of times, I learned my lesson. I just don't... Let me tell you about the last race, as long as it's brought up. We had some renegades who decided they'd come up with rules to get all of our clients who didn't like me because I wouldn't give them rules. So they came up with a rule and said, always use the last race. Without exception, always use the last race. It came out in their manual. So we did a study... every horse in every race to see what the last race produced. Looking at every horse in every race, taking the best two of their last race, the win percentage came to 31.8 for two horses. Hardly any good. When we were using, that was using their program. Using our program, it came to about 37.5, but that's still not good enough. So they decided that they, upon further research, we just discovered that the last race is not the one to use. After all that research, they needed to prove it was. One week after the follow-up came out, they had enough research to prove that was not the way to do it. Amazing.
For as long as I've been with the methodology, you have always advised using the second best race showing, the second best speed rating. I'm having difficulty reconciling that with...
No, that's not what I said was. Let me tell you what I actually said, see if you don't agree. What I said was in the yellow manual was that people who read Ray Talbot, and I was talking about Daryl Martin, my research director specifically, Ray Talbot says that if the horse is in form, you can go back to its best race. And I said that is disastrous. Try to avoid using a horse's best race under all circumstances unless it was his last race. And if you need an alternative, if you need a rule like that, at least just use the horse's second best race. Neither one is recommended, but if you, rather than use its best race ever, which will get you in a lot of problems, although you, when it does win, you'll get great prizes going back 8-10 lines, but you can't wait around for that. No, I never made that kind of a statement. I said, as opposed to using its best ever, you'd be better off, if you have to have a rule, using its second best race. But this procedure... the best in the last three races by the speed rating has proven very successful for those who are looking for a guideline. Any other questions? I want to reiterate, this is not the way I'm recommending you do it unless you can't do it the way that you're going to hear from the other speaker.
When you say the best in the last three races, like if you're doing sprints in the last three raw routes, would you go back to the sprints?
No, if there... you would have to make a decision here. If this is a confirmed router and he has no great internal fractions in the route, does not run the 6 furlong portion of the route very, very well, then I would throw the horse out. If he was misplaced in routers and all of his racing lines before the last three were sprints and he did well, and the trainer just decided he was wrong making him a router, then I'd probably use either a sprint or the internal fractions from one of the routes. It is a decision that you've got to make. That's why I say there are no mechanicals. You can't say, Howard said to do it this way. I don't want you to think of it as mechanical. I want you to think of it as a guideline to help you when all else fails, when you can't do what Jimmy and Tom and the rest are going to teach you. But it does work, and it does. But you've got to use some judgment in anything. And like, for instance, should I use it? Would I go back four lines? Yes. If he has no race that's comparable, then I go back four lines. If the last three races were turf, and the horse is essentially a dirt race before that, I go back four lines to get a line. It's not set in cement. So that's when you can go back four lines, when none of the last three represent a comparable class, distance, or service. Yes, sir?
Doc, going back to Never again, that race at Flip Fairplex, am I right in assuming that adjusted speed rating would be 79 then? And we have an 89 with a question mark on it.
Yeah. It's something less than what it is. Look up the... Sam Vaught will tell you in a second. It's low. It's not... He's not in the ballpark. He really isn't. I only put him in there so we get some questions about it. This is where you have to make a decision. Am I going to take a whirlwind horse at Fairplex and adjust him up to the others? I'm going to get him. You buy the horse. This is a warning against putting in slow horses and making two adjustments, which is Jimmy's chief reason for avoiding the two adjustments. You buy the horse if you take him off that slow line, because it did run well. But if you just use your 3-year best time at Fairplex, what's the difference, Tom? You know, Tom has rated off the
what?
What's the difference? About 7 ticks?
Between Fairplex and what?
Santa Anita.
The 3-year best.
Well,
it's about 5 or 6 lengths.
I think it's 5 or 6 or 7. So you see what he does? It gets him down there. That's just put in there as a red flag in front of a bull, so you won't take that 89 or whatever it was, those 90s and 89s, and mix them up with 86s and 85s. You're on next, Tom, so don't wander too far.
How about the lizard?
Well, I said you were not mortal.
Say, Doc.
Yeah.
Speaking of that favorite Z Maestro, bottom level claimer, 5 years old, 3 wins and 38 starts.
Now, aren't you proud of the fact that without knowing all that, the program threw it out? See, we can't depend on people being as bright as you are. That's Tony Hill, one of the most amazing handicappers I've ever met, despite his superannuation. The only guy in the room older than I am. Bruce.
Yeah, Doc, I've got a comment, a question, I guess it is. When you do this on the buyer numbers, I have noticed we've got so many off tracks, and when there's an off track, his number seems to skew very high. Do you have a comment on that, on the selection of these things?
No, because if you use my guidelines, you use the buyer number that's comparable to the speed rating. Now, if you
want to... That's what I mean. He goes ballistic with how big it gets compared to the speed ratings when we have an off track.
See, what we're doing is we're doing something that's semi-automatic. Anytime anything's even remotely automatic, you have these problems. However, if you take it overall, and you're not going to use this anyway, Bruce. You have your own.
I paid it for the...
But actually, what happens is that in your overall, if let's say the speed rating is 7th and the buyer is 2nd because of the skewing. That's a 9, he gets a 4.5, he probably isn't going to be in there anyway. But those of you who want to do 2 horses for each race now, you can use the best buyer in the last 3 and the best speed rating in the last 3. Then you have to put in 2 lines for each horse, and you can call Spencer and you can probably meet after the races and say how well you'd have done if you had time to do them. No more questions, huh? Does everybody understand that this guideline? It's a down and dirty way. I've been doing it. Not out of choice, but just out of fascination for how effective it's been. And then you compare it with the best lines chosen by your experts who do not use this system, and you'll find that it's pretty much the line they chose. Look at Brohammer's choices today. Look at all the people's choices of lines and see how comparable they are to this, even though they didn't even know about this and wouldn't even consider using it. You can go to the men's room and tell Brohammer he's on.
I'll take the microphone to the men's
room. Wooden microphone, but not going into it. Any last question before while we're stalling for Brohammer? And somebody asked me when we're going to have lunch. It'll be at 1 o'clock.
I'll take a little break.
No. After an hour, you can't give a break. They'll want to break every hour. Some people are going to take a break anyway. Go ahead. Get some coffee. There they are, folks. There's Bradshaw. Brohammer wouldn't go as long as you were in the room, huh? He's shy.
Here he comes. Here he comes.
Here he comes. Don't
hey,
guy.
Hey.
Come on down.
Tom? Tom, where would you like? They almost set the microphone in the men's room.
What about the...
prove your mortality.
Everybody's looking at me. What's the question on the floor right now?
No question.
The men's room was just fine. There was five stalls, no waiting.
You're now on. We know how hard you've rehearsed for this. Do you want to sit here? Or do you want to sit at the
floor? Oh, all right. Where am I going to moderate from? Where? I just shouldn't sit up there.
Okay.
But I can spread things in front of me.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to see Tom Brohammer make his walk from the rear of the room to the table. Get that coat off the table. Tom does not like anything to obstruct the view of it.
That's his coat.
That's Brohammer's coat.
Oh, well, no. You could have got the coffee first, Brohammer. You didn't have to stall. Boy, one little hardback and it changes them.
Forever.
Tom, now we'll take you over. Do one race at a time, and we'll you saw the schedule there. You do one, and somebody else does one, and you just do your next one later. Okay. Hey, you want to? I don't want anybody.
I'll do the race. I want you to do the race. Okay.
The idea is that initially we were going to have other people do it, but I find out that one person doing it. The mindset of the individual cannot absorb two mental imageries at once. That's based on what I've observed about the client.
You mean the thing I got up to study this morning doesn't count anymore?
Right? Oh, sure, it counts. Let me read it so I see what I promised.
Oh, good.
That's scratched.
Spotlight, please.
Yeah.
Drum roll.
I'm sorry to take so long to get set up here. This is a surprise to me, too.
You've got a baby.
Now, you want me to do the one that says Marion Jones?
Try turning to page 15.
13.
Pardon me. You're not here.
This is a winning race. Yeah, I like this race. Okay. Now I got to see what readouts you wound up with. The way we do this is that he asks for several races for these things, and I always send him races that I handicapped and races that were successful. Now, the impression is not to ever have you think that all races go like these races. That's not so. We select races that demonstrate points and demonstrate the benefits of having handicapped them okay. By no means do I win all that many more races than you do, but the races that are in the manual are winning races for that reason. So don't think that this is going to pay a good price. So don't think that these are every day, every race.
Don't turn
13. I'm on page 13 now.
Yeah, don't turn to the results until Tom goes completely over the race, and then he can turn to 60, but don't go beyond just the each single race done.
All right. Now, the way I approach it, first of all, This is a race toward the end of the year for three-year-olds. Now, these are three-year-old fillies. Early in the year, this is shaky ground, and I always approach it that way. But remember now, when you hit October, this is the Oak Tree meeting October, now we're into Hollywood Fall, that these horses are going to be four very shortly. So the unpredictability is still there to a degree because it's a restricted class level, or age level, these are three-year-olds only, but it's not like it was early in the year when they just moved from their two-year-old season. So this is perfectly playable to me, and this is the kind of race that I like. And during this recent Oak Tree meeting, a fellow by the name of Frank Romano convinced Oak Tree that they should sponsor a customer instruction program. And what we did is every Saturday and Sunday, starting at 9:30 in the morning till after the ninth race in the afternoon, we would lecture from the morning till about 11:30, and then we would talk about the card and specific examples on every race, but mainly examples from the instruction as often as we could. And the three handicappers in that session were Frank Romano, who's a very big player and a good handicapper, James Quinn, and myself. And we were uniformly agreed that the majority of the money all of us make, especially Frank and I, were from these claiming races, and not from these glamour races, these name races, these big handicap, Breeders' Cup Day, those kinds of things. And this is the bread and butter at the racetrack. And so this is the kind of race that I always handicap on the card. $20,000 claiming races, 16s, 12 fives. I'll go lower than that if that happens to be the menu. And where I finally start pulling in my horns and handicapping toward the after I finished everything else will be the non-winners of threes and the stakes races. And the majority of the money that I play at the racetrack goes into this kind of a race. I'm not sure I had to say that, but I've said it. In this particular race, we start with, we'll just go in order, but usually I start with the morning line favorite. Now this is going to be complete, isn't it, Howard? Howard's gone. Howard's over in one of those stalls, no wind. I usually start with the morning line favorite, and the morning line favorite in this race, I think was Sandrak, but we're going to start with No Social Graces because that was the betting favorite, and that seemed to be a logical betting favorite. This is a Bob Baffert horse. Bob Baffert horses in Southern California always draw money. This was the favorite, and I made this horse a contender, and I would think you would too, but you've got several things you have to deal with. One of them is the 10-month layoff. The other thing you have to deal with, and somebody came to me earlier and said on another race, you know, I wrote a chapter in my book called Negative Class Drops. Well, the negative class drops that I addressed in the book and addressed again in an article not too long ago for the follow-up. Can you hear me all right in the back of the room? All right. In the follow-up, the negative class drop that I'm addressing there are horses that are running right now regularly. A horse that ran last week at San Anita, a horse called Pro Angle. This horse, for those of you that are familiar with it, for those of you that aren't, I'll describe it to you. The horse had run for 12.5 after being claimed recently, had run a race for 12.5 claiming. She had been close to the pace all the way at 7 furlongs. She actually moved into the lead at the 8th pole, got beat by one horse in the final strides. Once she had passed, came back and beat her. She got beat 3/4 of a length for 12.5. In her next start, off that, a week and a half or so later, 2 weeks later, she's dropped to 10. Now that's the negative class drop. This is a horse that almost won or can win, certainly on the paper, at a given level and then drops. Now anybody thinking to claim a horse looks at that and will say, this horse is competitive at 12.5, is an earner at 12.5, look at the bargain, I get a 10. Well, that's the opposite approach. You should look at that and say, then why is the horse in for 10? And the point was that is the negative class drop. That's a horse that's running. Now in the case of this horse got beat, and got beat by the logical horse to beat it, who paid $8.60 instead of paying the $6 she might have paid otherwise. No Social Graces. This is not the negative class drop that I talked about, but this is a very negative pattern. Look at this horse and how well they thought of her. In her very first start, on October 18th of 92, this horse wins convincingly as a two-year-old, and the race itself goes in, I thought it was 116.3, but it looks like 116.1. Can anybody read that better than I without my reading glasses?
Four.
That's 16-4. Now that's very, very good for a two-year-old filly at Santa Anita. That's very good. Now that, with that said, she wins convincingly, and off that race they move her into a little restricted stakes called the Moccasin Stakes at Hollywood Park. And she runs well into the stretch. Now, she's unseasoned, so that she really hasn't disgraced herself, has she? Now, the Pasadena Stakes is one of the good brand new three-year-old stakes that they run at Santa Anita. Now, granted, they're 2 days away from being three-year-old, but this is part of the three-year-old series they run at Santa Anita. These are good horses that run at Pasadena Stakes. She shows early speed and then backs out of that. 10 months later, she's back in for $32,000 without ever having had the opportunity to break her non-winners of one in an allowance race, right? Now, that is a negative. That's not the negative class drop that I talk about in the book, and please don't attribute that to me in races like this, because I get it all the time. Say, well, this is one of your negative class drops. I said, it's not. But this is a very negative drop. It just doesn't fit the pattern that I tried to give. So this is very negative, and this is, there's one way only to deal with this horse. If you make it a contender, you make it a contender marginally, but when it comes time to bet it, this is not the kind of horse you want to take a short price on. Because there are so many negatives surrounding it. She is clearly good enough to win a race like this. In 10 months, she should have matured. So she's clearly good enough to win a race like this. And the question is, why is she in here? Now, the only way to play this race is to bet against her. And for this reason. If she's any good any longer, she should be heavily betted here, right? Can you agree with that?
Yes.
Now, what's the conclusion you can make if she's not heavily betted here? That she's really wrong now. See, this is a lose-lose situation betting on this horse. Would everybody agree to that? Would anybody that disagrees to that, please raise your hand and we can talk about that. All right, we're all in agreement. Now, she is one of the strong contenders in the race based on that, but she's not bettable. Look at Baby's Got Class. Raise your hand if you would make this horse a contender. Raise your head if you don't make it a contender. All right, everybody's kind of out in the woods on this one, then, right? There's no real reason, except she has no early speed. There's no real reason to throw her out, because if there's nobody in this race better than No Social Graces, or better than Baby's Got Class would be a contender, wouldn't it? Even though she's not any good. So you look for somebody to beat her, but she'd be a contender because she's in reasonably good form. She's close enough at the stretch call last time. She's not quite as close as I would like to have seen her. We'll talk about the contender guidelines. Well, we'll talk about them right now, and then we'll talk about them again later. Now, when I make a contender in these races, all right, I insist that in the last race, especially, but if it's excusable, I'll go back too, that the horse was close up. And by close up, in a sprint, I want the horse within about 2.5 lengths at the stretch call. And if the horse meets that condition quickly enough, without judging whether the horse is any good or not, that gives me at least an upfront contender. Now, this horse is marginally or half a length off of that guideline. So I wouldn't throw it out based on that, but the horse is in reasonably good form, so I'd accept it. Now, look at Terra's Secret. If you drop back three back and look at her buyer number, she's better than the other two horses you've looked at, right? But that's suicidal to do that. Because you have to somehow explain her last two races. Now, one of them was on the turf, but she was dull as she could be, and then she came off of that dull race and ran dull again. Now, I did not consider this horse to be a contender at any time. And I'm not so flexible that I just overlook races like that and drop back. Now, Howard kids me sometimes about having $8 horses and $7 horses and $6.80 and $8.20, but Jimmy and I were talking about that in the off time. Those are the horses that are the bread and butter horses. And I accept $8 and $9 as a very fair mutual, especially betting one horse. Now, to get $40 and $60 and $80 and $90 horses, I don't get the $90 horse. I never get a $90 horse, and I'll tell you that up front. And to get those, you have to overlook the form that a horse like Terra's Secret has got. And I just don't do that. Yes? Question? I did not do that.
Would you possibly forgive her last race because it was her first time at that particular track?
Well, no, I wouldn't. And the reason I wouldn't is that she gets also credit for a wide trip. But horses like this get, in fact, you probably find all kinds of problems for her. Rallied wide, wide trip, broke slowly, six wide into the stretch. This kind of horse is always in that kind of a situation. That's number one, why I wouldn't excuse her. Number two is that the Southern California tracks are so similar that the move from Hollywood to Del Mar to Santa Anita, although some horses run better at one than the other, is never sufficient for me to say that I'll excuse a horse on a trip like that or a race like that, ever. Now, had she come from the East Coast and all of a sudden had best of 52 workout afterward, best of 30 since then, those kinds of things, then I might look at it and say, I'll forgive the horse that race. But I would never forgive Terra's Secret race. And we're going to get to a lot of points. But there's another point I want to make. Is that especially if you're around the racetrack a lot, you're going to hear a lot of excuses made for horses, especially name horses. And I would caution you to always take the other approach when you hear excuses made for these horses. Always take the approach that excuse is being made by trainer, owner, connections to the horse to excuse the bad effort, and it's usually a rationalization. And a few years back, for those of you that were involved in racing, there was a series of races run that Ferdinand was a 5-year-old, Ali Sheba was a 4-year-old, and for the life of me, I can't remember this other horse, and it was a Craig Lewis horse that really got good for a short period of time, won the Hollywood Gold Cup.
Cutlass Reality.
And we did a seminar down in Beaumont, and it was a handicapping seminar, and it was one of those rare times when we swept the card. And the 8th race was the Hollywood Gold Cup. Now, after the initial part of the season, the Santa Anita handicap, Ali Sheba had gone kind of soft, and Van Berg was making excuses for Ali Sheba about the horse being peaked to the Santa Anita handicap. Now it was a little short. It turned out those excuses later on were valid because the horse became unbeatable subsequently. But if you listen to that, and even worse than that, Charlie Whittingham is making major excuses for Ferdinand about the excuses Ferdinand had been beaten here, he'd been beaten there, but he's not going to get beat again. I have no idea. I know why he would do that. Of course, Ferdinand was a glamour horse. Cutlass Reality, on the other hand, was doing it right now. And we picked Cutlass Reality solidly in this race, and the horse won by 9. And the caution that I made to the group was don't buy into these excuses. Just don't do it. Because they'll still be making excuses down the line for these horses, and you'll still be betting on them. So don't do that. And in the case of Terra's Secret, if you have to make excuses, for one thing, the second race back is probably excusable, although she didn't show anything. So if you want to excuse that one and then excuse the last one, now you're in a position of making excuses for these horses. The trainer's already doing that, so you're just compounding the problem. Terra's Secret is not excusable, so you throw her out. There's a question?
Yeah. If you notice, the last two times Terra's Secret ran in the third 2000 claimant, she won. And this is the third 2000 claimant, and she's stepping down from fourth.
All right. Do you realize... Look at the race prior to winning at 32. At $40,000, one of my contender guidelines is that I roll back to the second call, that contender guideline of being up close. Now look at the race prior to her win at 32. Now look at a race prior to this race at 32. Can you see a difference in that?
Yeah.
Once she can't get out of her own way. And the difference between 32 and 40, that's considered most times as the same claiming bracket. 32 to 40 is interchangeable. There isn't a whole lot of difference. And any part-time chart you ever see, it's like one length. In some places, none. It's basically the same horses moving back and forth. But the prior race to her win is a lot different than the race you just looked at. Janet Stahl. Raise your hand if you'd like to make this horse a contender. All right, there are a few hands up, and she ran fourth, beaten 2 lengths on April 29th. This is October. This is a horse with no speed. Look at the workout line, it's available to you. Where are the works prior to October 18th or whatever that date, October 10th? There are none. She only has a maiden 32 win to her credit. Now, if she were really sharp, because a lot of these may not have more than that, but look at Janet Stahl and look at the pattern leading up to this race. Now, you could put her in a computer, but often that's an exercise. And it's often a really negative exercise because you wind up with her as one of your choices in this race. She has no early speed at all, and let me clue you into Santa Anita Oaktree. Until 2 days before the Breeders' Cup, this was a presser and early paradise, especially pressers. If you were within a length and a half all the way around the racetrack, not just at the second call, 2 days prior to the Breeders' Cup, the track became about 5 lengths slower than it had been. So they're obviously prepping that racetrack for the Raiders Cup. But prior to that, this track, this horse virtually had no chance. And so just look at the lines, say, well, the horse has beaten two lengths, right? But also remember that back in April, a race for 40 is not the same as a race for 32 in October for these young horses. Because in January, for example, at Santa Anita, especially at Santa Anita, these three-year-olds, the brand new three-year-olds, don't run for anything less than $40,000, period. That's like a $10,000 claiming race at Santa Anita for older. They don't run any longer. Then as the year goes on, this level begins to drop. At Santa Anita, I think it drops to 32. At Hollywood, it drops to like 25. And just now, they're dropping these three-year-olds to like 12.5. Just now. So this race at $40,000 is not a $40,000 race in October. That field, that is equivalent to about a 12.5 or 16 now because of the way the three-year-olds dropped. This horse could not have run for anything less at that time of year. That's the lowest she could run for at Santa Anita. Actually, that's Hollywood Park. So she could have run for 32. I'll back up just a little. But nevertheless, the idea is the same. Always be careful of that, and always consider that. So she was running at virtually the bottom of the barrel with no speed. So she's no contender here. Yes. Yeah, I mean, remember now, the age of these horses has a lot to do with your handicapping and two class analysis. Because that's the way it works. They're heavily protected. The two-year-olds right now, you don't see two-year-olds running for anything less than $50,000 or $40,000 right now at the major racetrack. Because they're still protecting them. And as the year goes, they begin to drop that. And the horse that was running for 40 in January is liable to be running for 12.5 now because it's the bottom net.
Tom, would you repeat those again?
Yeah, and I'm not exact on them, okay, but I'm very close. In January at Santa Anita, Hollywood's not running, but in January at Santa Anita, the very bottom you can run a three-year-old for is about 40,000. Now, a little later in the meeting, I think toward the end of the regular Santa Anita meeting, which runs from December 26th to about April 20th, and toward the end of the meeting, you can run them for 32, I think. Then at Hollywood, they run for 32, and eventually they drop them to 25, I think, before the Hollywood meeting is over. But all the way through the year, the three-year-olds are running for a lot more money than they're worth. And if you take a horse that won in April as a three-year-old for $25,000, that was not a $25,000 claiming race. That was the very bottom level. So be careful of that. And now, next year, the thing you're going to be faced with, we might as well talk about that now. Next year, or in January of this year, you're going to be faced with looking at a horse that looks like it's got a ton of back class. A horse running for 12.5 that's a brand new four-year-old, for example, and you look at it and say, a horse went for 32 last March. Don't ever be trapped with that. Because that horse didn't win for 32. It happened to win for 32 because that's the lowest it could run for, and the horses it was running against are probably all now $10,000 horses also. So always be careful when you're judging young horses with that back class issue. There was another hand up. Here comes the microphone so we can all hear it.
This is more of a comment. I think it was at Hollywood this year that Hubbard ran the first three-year-old claimers at 12.5. Ann Dewey and that group of fillies were, I mean, I guess that was the first time they dropped that low.
This week?
No, that was in Hollywood in the summer. They went to 12.5 and three-year-old filly claimers.
I didn't recall it. Are you sure of that?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it was the first time they dropped below 16,000 in their recent memory.
All right, they're transferring Woodlands-style racing to Hollywood Park because they also dropped the bottom level to 8,000. And the $8,000 claiming level were just $10,000 horses a few weeks later when they went to Delmar.
Okay.
That's a point well taken. But the point is still major. Don't ever be trapped with back class on these young horses when they become four-year-olds because the bottom will drop right out of them on January 1 in Southern California. Because very few races are carded for four-year-olds only. And that ends right away. All right, so now we've thrown out Tara's Secret, and we've thrown out Janet's Doll, and we have a big X against those social graces. What about Title and Doubt? Well, I heard an out, but I left this horse in. I mean, and the reason I left it in is you have one race showing on the horse, and what has the horse done wrong? Now, it's a very slow race, and it's not going to measure up, but on the other hand, especially with a young horse, they can improve a great deal after their first race. actually can improve at any time. The younger horses, although we're beginning to push the four-year-old envelope here. But there's no reason to, there's no reason to throw this horse out, is there? So if you throw out, if you just arbitrarily throw out horses like this, you're gonna suffer a lot of losses. That when you go back, you say, I shouldn't have thrown that horse out. There was no reason to do that. It means whatever guidelines you use. I have certain guidelines, and I hesitate to call them rules because I bend them a lot. So I'm not sure I'm gonna call them rules. But nevertheless, this horse fits any of them. And if the horse measures up, there's no reason to think. Especially Ron Ellis is one of the highest percentage.